Hey, and welcome to the School Talk Podcast, the podcast where we talk anything school-related. And today's episode is focused on goals and kind of a little bit of leadership as well, so that fits in the school wheelhouse. Jenny is not sitting with me. We actually have a special guest co-host back at the mic. Kelly Simon is sitting with me. Kelly, how are you doing?
Great. And I wonder when the term special gets eliminated, because, you know, if you sub in frequently enough, and maybe it's not special, and maybe not even guest. I don't know.
I feel like we got to dance carefully there, because Jenny could actually believe that could be a real possibility.
That's true. No offense, honey. Love you, J-Hill.
If she even listens.
Well, there would be your sign.
She's probably like, it's Greg and Kelly. There's no, nothing coming out of that. All right, so Kelly, today we're going to talk about a concept that kind of arose to me in the last couple months, and it kind of came out of part of my health journey. So if you remember back, we did a whole series on goals, and you even guest hosted the values episode of that. So there might be some carryover here as well, but this is a concept that I developed that came out of my goals. And the idea is, or the concept is called, I call it take the hit. Okay, so let me explain. Now, you don't have any pets, correct?
No, thank goodness.
Okay, so you're one of the sane people here, and we actually ended up getting an extra dog. We have a COVID pup. We had a COVID dog, like, as if we needed more. 5 kids, 1 dog already. It's like, let's add another 50-pound thing to feed. Those who have dogs, maybe those who don't know, that a lot of people put in what's called an invisible fence to keep their dog in their yard. And basically how it works is the dog wears a collar, right? And on that collar is a little transmitter that picks up sound and then zaps the dog if they go too far from the house. So all the way around the outside of your yard, you'd put a wire in the ground, and when the dog's collar gets too close to it, the dog gets a beep, and then if the dog keeps going, they get a static correction according to the manual. I call it zapped. So both our dogs have been trained on this, and they do a very nice job. They stay in our yard, they never leave. It works perfectly. There's no fence. Nothing's technically holding them back other than the fear of them getting zapped if they get too close to the boundary of the yard. Now, as you know, Kelly, we have 5 kids, 2 dogs. Our house is nuts. So those collars need to be charged probably once a month. Our dogs' collars half the time are dead. The other half of the time they're sitting on the counter. That's saying that even if those dogs were to go up to that wire in the ground, they're not going to hear a beep. They're not going to get zapped. Yet, they stay in the yard.
Interesting.
And they do that because Christy and I trained them to do that. Like, we conditioned them to know, I go up to this point, I push the boundary, I get corrected, I get a beep or a zap, and then I run back to my safe zone, which is closer to the house. We've trained them to do that as puppies. So they know, I go out there, something hurts me, I don't like that, and I'm running away from it. Now, I would argue that we as human beings are no different than my 2 dogs, who could easily run out, get past their boundary, and enjoy all that life has to offer instead of the quarter acre they're stuck to. There's a few reasons I don't think we do. 1, it hurts, right? Just like Gideon, just like Rufus. Yes, that does rhyme with doofus, and that's what I call him. They go up, they get zapped, they push the boundaries, and they run back. Imagine the boundary is like trying something new in your life, or pushing yourself to achieve something new, or to go after a new goal, or a new part of a goal, or try something. And how often it is, like, there's that awkward feeling, or it's like someone says something or hurts a little bit, where you find yourself, I'm running back to my safe place. I'm not doing that anymore. One of the examples I want to share is running a 5K. In my health journey, I remember about a year and a half in, I'm like, I'm going to run a 5K. That means running miles. Before that, like, my journey, I would never have thought of running miles as in plural, but I set the goal to do that. And I remember some people close to me said, like, you can't do that. Like, you're going to hurt your knees. You're going to hurt your hips. You're just not a runner. You're not built for it. Which it hurt. It was like, man, I was all excited for this. I was like, had this goal, I had this plan, and now I'm telling the world I'm going to do it. And I go, and it's just like, I hit the boundary, and zap, you can't do that. Which made me feel a little sad. Like, I wanted to run back to my safe place, back to my yard. I didn't. I kept pressing forward. The cool thing is, once I ran that 5K, Do you think I was thinking of that awkward conversation or those hurt things that people said?
If you were, it would probably be in more of a, not only did I prove this to myself, but to the doubters.
Correct. You know, I don't know who said it, but the best revenge is massive success.
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
It's like, I can do this.
I can see Gideon and Rufus, you know, digging through the dumpster and eating the leftover pizza down the road, wagging their tails at you saying, look at us out of the yard.
Look at all we've achieved.
Yes.
To be a dog. another example, I think, of like pushing that boundary and not being afraid to take the hit. Last year, a couple years ago, when we had to switch over to virtual learning and we had some students who we were in person, and even as I say this, I'm probably giving people like traumatic experience, like PTSD.
Sure.
But it's a good example. And a few kids at home, right? And they were virtual students. So the teacher would teach the kids at school and then also put content out for those at home. She came to me and asked, like, I want to do some like live stream stuff where if the activity allows that I bring the kids who are at home virtually into the classroom. I thought this was a great idea. Some people pushed her on this, though. We had many conversations where it's just like, we're hitting that boundary, and it's so awkward. It hurts when people like questions like, why are you doing that? Like, don't do that. That's dumb. It doesn't make sense. I don't get that. Now, it was nice because we did push it past that boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the kids participate, it's like, it was totally worth taking that little bit of a hit to push myself to try something new, to bring them into the class in that way.
And I'm hearing something I think we'll circle back to maybe later on in this podcast, but I'm hearing in both of those examples that happen to be, of course, pushing through the zaps and making it out of the yard, that maybe, just maybe, it was worth to push through because the original idea was rooted in a deeper value or a deeper level of decision than just, I'm going to try this crazy thing. And so maybe like the zap hurt, but it didn't actually hurt to the point of, never mind, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go back to my safe zone. So my example of that would be, as you know from previous podcasts, or if you're new to this one, I'm currently in a administrative role in the district, but started out in the same district as a teacher. And so when I first actually applied for this role, I didn't get it. I was turned down the first time. Talk about a major zinger. It wasn't a zap. It was a zinger, right?
Collar was set to 10.
Woof. Yeah.
Dogs,
all the way back to my classroom. And so, you know, obvious, that's kind of more of an obvious one. Like, no, it was a legit quote unquote failure. You didn't make the cut. So obviously I was at a choice point. The choice point, how am I going to handle that? You know, am I the pouty dog who then for, you know, in dog's world, maybe minutes, but in a human's world, probably years, walks around sulking, head down, I'm not good enough. You know, they were, you know, all of those stories we tell ourselves when we're presented with what seems to be a failure. Or am I going to take the hit, temporarily stay in the yard, because really that's what I've been asked to do, and then gear back up and figure out how to take that feedback, that zap, that hit, and next time I approach the fence, be ready, be more ready, you know, or have deeper reflection or change the things that maybe the first time around didn't make me as prepared. And so fast forward, obviously, since I'm sitting in this role, I ended up getting the job at another point when it was given as an opportunity. Now, the crazy thing is about this whole idea of, you know, the analogy to the dogs is, I think in theory, and I don't know, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong since I'm not a pet owner, if they were wearing the collar and it was charged, unlike your dogs, they make it through the fence, it zings them then, but in theory, aren't they supposed to keep getting the zaps?
Now, technically, no. Oh. Eventually it stops.
Okay.
So that's the thing that the dogs also don't understand. And I think that applies to us as well. And I think this transitions nicely into another point where my dogs don't realize, like, yeah, there's a 10 or 15 foot gap of uncomfort where you're going to be getting zapped. After that, though, it stops.
So that is exact what I'm talking about. So you would think, oh, good, she got the job the second time. She made it through the barrier. She made it through the fence. Oh, heavens. Oh, the zap of not getting the job the first time was nothing compared to the zaps that came my way once in the role, right? The idea that at the time I was like 30 or 31 maybe, you know, had been in the classroom for 9 or 10 years. In theory, that's super young to be in a district administrative role, overseeing an entire district, based on what experience people would say, based on what level of education people would say, based on what, how'd she get that job? Being a female and who, you know, wears high heels, you can imagine where that would go. The theories on why she got the job. And you can tell yourself the stories there because those are the stories that were told. Not only that, but then the zaps at home. A home that was used to someone who had really great routines on how to be a teacher and a mom. I had it down. I knew exactly what my balance was. I knew how to turn on and off my teacher mode and the amount of time I would spend at home planning and correcting papers and of the such, and the amount of time I would spend being a devout wife and mother. We were a routined family. Obviously, this threw zaps all over everybody's world. All of a sudden, mom's not home when she's supposed to be home. Supper isn't ready. Mom's not there when we get up, so breakfast isn't ready. Sundays are no longer family days. Mom's working on Sundays. Like the zaps and the zaps and the zaps. So that time period of getting through that. Now, is it to say now being in this role for 9 years, the zaps don't keep coming? Oh, no. I still play around the fence often enough to be zapped. The difference is I'm conditioned now in a different way. I'm not conditioned as the dog is to run away from the fence and run away from the zaps. I'm conditioned that I know how to handle the zaps. I know what they feel like. I know they're temporary. And a lot of that goes back to Greg's two examples. And the reason that I'm willing to keep taking them is because the decisions I made are so based in the right things, the values or what have you, where the zaps are worth it.
Yeah, so obviously this whole philosophy of like leaving your yard only works if it is something that you're pursuing that's making you a better version of yourself.
Absolutely.
So like if I were to say, hey, Kelly, I'm going to try something new. And, you know, I'm going to see if I can eat a 3-pound cheeseburger every day for a month straight. I would hope you would say, Greg, that's the stupidest thing you've ever said. Well,
Greg,
maybe not. I mean, there's some dandies up.
That's pretty dumb.
But either way, where it's like, oh, yeah, that was a little hit because I had this idea, which wasn't going to get me closer to my goals. Like I needed to be hit there. So I'm would be glad that there's family there, but to say, or friends, I would say, hey, I don't know if this is the best thing for you, but if it's something where it's like, I'm working toward this and I know it's connected to my goals. And in fact, some of the most important people in my circle are also saying, yeah, that's awesome. And what do you need for me to help you achieve that? And there's a few rogue people saying something. You're probably, those are the times like, take that hit and keep going.
Right.
And then going back to your story too, Kelly, it shows that unlike my dog example, as we push through those boundaries, I would argue that our wire in the ground just gets pushed further out. And that now you've created a bigger yard, but there's still a boundary out there.
Good point.
And you're going to keep running up to that. And I don't think it's one of those things... That you're ever going to be done saying to yourself, like, I have to take
great
this
point.
Hit. Because if you do, you're basically done doing anything new or done pushing yourself or done trying to better yourself in any way. So I would say, like, the hits aren't going to stop. Now, what will happen is you're going to get used to it. You're going to realize that typically when I'm taking a hit, on the other side of it is great growth and great opportunity. And I think you'll start to see that, yes, even though it hurts and it's awkward, and it's painful. Maybe sometimes I have to say goodbye to people, that in the end, it's worth it because you're getting closer to your why, closer to your values.
Well, and I think on that point of that great point you slipped in there on the saying goodbye to people, here's part of the lesson that comes out of this. Sometimes it started with you leaving the yard, and sometimes it ends with you leaving relationships. So there's a lot of quotes out there that say something like, you know, when you're trying to better yourself and people are holding you down, when's the point where you're going to realize they're not your people? They may have served you at one point of your life when maybe your values or direction in life was different, and that's great. But if they're not continuing to serve you as you reach these different goals or what have you, then sometimes you have to call that and change that. I've given this analogy in podcasts before, and if we were, you know, on Dax Shepard, this would be part of the fact check afterwards, because I don't know if this is actually true, but I love it, so I'm going to use it. So in theory, I guess, if you're a crab fisherman and you have this crab bucket, you don't always have to use a lid. You have to use a lid only when there's one crab in the bucket. So you put one crab in the bucket, you have to lid that baby or that crab will climb out. As soon as that crab fisherman gets more than one, two or multiple in that crab bucket, having the lid on it is no longer important. Why, you should ask? Because crabs by nature will pull each other back down. No, they will not let just one escape. They will pull, as soon as one starts to crawl, they will pull that crab back down to the bottom of the bucket. This is a point when you get through the fence and you get through the yard where you have to look around at the crabs in your life, literally and figuratively. If common people are the ones that continue to zap, you have to ask, are they just afraid of my growth? And if they can't get through that fear and find a place of support themselves and maybe even leave the yard with you, then you do have to, you are at a choice point. Are they your people? I would honestly argue that's a harder zap than the original hit of their criticism.
Yep. The fact that, man, I thought this was someone who I was going to have in my life and was going to be a key inner circle person. And it turns out that it's just not, because I have this vision and I have these values and these goals, and you're just holding me down.
You hear that a lot in the world of recovering alcoholics, that they had this great friend group, but as soon as they become sober, all of a sudden that friend group disassociates themselves. They're not even, you know, willing to have a Sunday coffee with you anymore, because there's not that, you know, you're not funny anymore to them. You know, you don't do the same social things anymore. Even if you're still willing to go to a concert with them, you're just going to be the sober one. It just becomes, no, this doesn't happen every time. You just hear it a lot in those type of maybe drastic change type situations. But honestly, it happened to me in just simple situation of changing a job. You heard Greg's examples of it happening to him when he made some health choices. There's no right or wrong way. Just be aware that is maybe a hit or a zap that comes along with this growth.
And I think some of that can be fluid too. It's not like you're saying like, the hell with all these people. I think like with my health journey, and Kelly, you know, like my first year, I was so rigid. And looking back, it's like, that's just what I needed. I needed a year where I said, I'm not going out for a single lunch. If we have a PD day, I'm bringing my lunch. I'm acting as normal. Now, I have some close relationships with people who it's like, we would go out to lunch every PD day and we would have a great time. Or if we were away at a training, like, I'm bringing my lunch while the rest of my people go out to eat. And it was kind of like, guys, I have to do this for me. I have to go beyond my yard and I have to do something that's really, really hard. And that means for a season, I'm not going to be able to hang out with you guys in this capacity. Now, eventually, I'm going to be back and things will be better. But for now, I can't be hanging out in this situation for you, because I know if I go to that bar at lunchtime, I'm going to order the cheeseburger. I'm not ordering the salad.
But I think that's an exact example of figuring out, are they still your people? Can they accept that conversation and be like, oh, yeah, man, totally get it. You know what? Let's do this instead. After our conference or our session today, can we all take a group walk? We can talk then. That'll, you know, then that serves your goals and our goals of wanting to be with you. I think it's in the face of like, oh, are you serious? Oh, okay, eat your bagged lunch. Yeah. You know, that's where you start to get the kind of understanding of like, man, they're not understanding my you know, direction here. Yeah. That happens time after time after time. That's when you're at the choice point, I believe.
Yes, I would agree. Now, one thing with, like you mentioned, going for a walk. I have found, like, going for a walk with people at school, when I think of going for a walk, it's like, I'm just going for a stroll. I didn't know, like, people walk at lunchtime. It's like a half jog.
I think, you know, and I used to teach eighth grade English, so we would have these hierarchies of words. I'm someone who doesn't just throw out the word love super easily. So, like, I would put love as a 10, and I would, like, work my way down with other words that could simulate love that I was just much, much easier with. I think that should happen with walk.
Yeah.
Like, you need to define on a scale of 1 to 10, where actually is walk compared to stroll, compared to meander?
I think stroll's a little... Yeah, there's a difference. I mean, even walking with Christy at night, it's like, it's just her. Like, I like it when she's pushing the stroller because it kind of like bogs her down a little bit. Yeah. It's like, now we're in stroll mode.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's in the word stroller. You're not, it's not the walker.
It's well, not the jog. Well,
there is a walker.
And there is a jogging stroller.
That's actually
going to
be slower than probably a stroller, depending on the people using the walker. All right, I digress. I think this whole concept fits very nicely into a quote that I've used throughout my journey, and it's posted in several places at my house, and that is, if you want what you have never had, you must be willing to do what you've never done. And the thing I didn't realize early in my journey was that those things often come with a hit and some discomfort, and that even though those are there, we have to push through it because it will in the end be worth it.
People, let's do it for the sake of the Gideons and the Rufuses who can't. We do not have to live programmed like dogs.
Correct. I mean, it'd be nice if the one dog would leave. I would love him to push his boundary and just go. Like, Doofus, Gideon, you stay here. You're not pushing the boundaries, but Doofus, man, I would love it. You just go. Go. Find your whole life's out there, dog. Get out there and explore.
Find a new path.
Just don't come back. Sorry, Christy. All right. Well, as we wrap up, I do want to let people know that we have a lot more episodes similar to this under our leadership tab at our website, www.schooltalkpodcast.com. You'll find a ton of past shows there, too. I believe this is episode 141.
Oof.
So go check those out. As always, as you leave, ask yourself, what one thing can I do to make me a better version of myself? Maybe it's pushing the boundary and being okay taking that hit. Then do it, because greatness isn't achieved by one event, but instead a series of small, intentional steps. As Jenny would say right now,
go be awesome.
Man, Jenny, that's gotta hurt. Just kidding. Jenny, I'm ready for you to come back.
Love
we'll
you.
Edit that out. Maybe not. No one's listening at this point. Are you, Jenny? All right.
Get it?
Have a good day.